In the OCIA, the Order of Christian Initiation of Adults, that process has four periods to it. The first period is the pre-catechumenate. Second period after the rite of acceptance, which we always do here out in the gathering space, they become catechumens. So the catechumenate is the second period. The third period is the period of enlightenment, and that's during Lent. And then the final period, mystagogia, takes place during the Easter season. And we do this cycle over and over again every year as we bring in new members to the church. But mystagogia is not just the Easter season, it's really the rest of their lives. And that's true for all of us here. Mystagogia is the unpacking of the mystery that we have already received. So they've already been baptized. This dates back to the 5th century when we have copies of some of the post-baptismal catecheses of some of those seminal bishops like St. Ambrose, who was the teacher of St. Augustine, St. Cyril of Jerusalem, St. Theodore of Mapuestia, these post-baptismal catecheses. In other words, it's saying that we receive the grace of God first and then we come into some fuller realization of what that means in our lives. We have a wonderful example of how that works in our gospel today. Luke loves to portray certain events as liturgies. So, first of all, it's the teaching of the church that there are four presences of Christ in the liturgy. The first one is in the gathered assembly, because Jesus said, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, I am there with them. Second is in the scriptures, the liturgy of the word, which is the proclamation of the scriptures and the homily. The third is in the minister, the priest. And fourthly, in the consecrated bread and wine. So now we go to that gospel. We have these two men walking down the road, and they're talking about Jesus. So there are two gathered in his name, and there is Christ with them. He falls in with them. They don't recognize him, but he's there. Just like now. Maybe we don't recognize the presence of Christ, but having gathered in his name, he's already here. And then secondly, as they walk down the road for several hours, Jesus explains the scriptures to them. He unpacks the meaning of the scriptures and shows how it all refers to him. And he says to them, how slow you are to realize that the Son of Man must suffer and come into his glory. So we'll talk about that more in a minute. And then finally they go into the inn and they sit down for a meal, and Jesus, the priest, takes the bread, blesses it, breaks it, and gives it to them, and then they finally recognize him. It's Eucharist. This is how we do mystagogia for the rest of our lives. One of the things we tell the newly baptized is the main way for the rest of your lives that you are going to grow in the understanding of what you have received is by attending Sunday Mass. The Thursday night sessions that we have been doing since last September, those have ended. They're not going to be coming on Thursday nights. They're going to be coming on Sunday morning. And they're going to be getting the same thing that you and I receive here every Sunday. The modern church has come to accept, and really this isn't new, it's an ancient tradition called Lectio Divina. You've probably heard of it. And the idea is that people gather together and they read scripture passages and they share what it means to them. They share their own life experiences as it relates to these. And then in that conversation, they kind of unpack the meaning of it in a way that they wouldn't have by themselves. Well, we do the same thing with junior high and high school religious education here in the parish. The main source of teaching in those classes is Lectio Divina. We read the scriptures for the following Sunday, and we unpack their meaning. There are scripture study groups in the parish. There are prayer groups in the parish that do that same thing, proclaiming to each other those scripture readings that they're going to hear on Sunday, the following Sunday, and they unpack their meaning. This is the principal way that we do continuing education for the rest of our lives. This is adult education in the Catholic Church. This is how it primarily happens. We have other things too. I teach classes that nobody comes to, you know. There are all kinds of opportunities in the parish that nobody takes advantage of. You know, this is the human nature. But I'm not too worried about that, because that isn't the primary way that we learn about our faith anyway. The primary way we learn about our faith is here at Sunday Eucharist. And Luke says, as those two disciples went back to the others, they say to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us as he preached the scriptures to us along the way?" There's some kind of a transformation that is available to us every time we celebrate Eucharist, every time we hear that word. And our hearts don't burn every time, but every now and then they do. Every now and then someone will say to me after Mass, you nailed it. That's exactly what I needed to hear today. That connected with me. And sometimes foolishly I ask, "So what did you hear?" And then they tell me something that I didn't say. And that's okay, because really more important than me is the Spirit. And the Spirit is speaking whether I connect or not. And hopefully sometimes I do connect and it's helpful, but not always. And hopefully the scripture readings are going to connect, but not always. But never underestimate the power of the Spirit active in this assembly. And then finally, Jesus says to them, "How slow you are to understand that the Son of Man has to suffer and enter into his glory." He enters into his glory through suffering. And we hear that here all the time. And we stare at the crucifixion scene every time we come in here. Because as Christians, we recognize that there's something paschal about love. That love is always about dying and rising. That love is always about giving something of myself. That I'm not always taking, that much of the time I'm giving. And we discover, almost as a side effect, that the more we give, the more we receive. The cross is the characteristic of Jesus' being. God is the dying one. God is the one who is willing to be vulnerable, the one who is willing to suffer, and therefore enter into his glory. So in the church year, we celebrate two feasts of the cross. One is Good Friday. We just did that a few weeks ago. And there we concentrate on the suffering of Jesus, his beating, the spitting that he endured, the crown of thorns, the long suffering on the cross. I mean, that's the concentration on Good Friday. But we have another feast of the cross on September 14th, and that's called the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. And there the emphasis is not so much on the suffering and death of Jesus, but the cross as his throne of glory. And Jesus said, "The Son of Man must be lifted up onto the cross of suffering, but lifted up onto the throne of glory." And that wonderful hymn from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, and we read this during Holy Week, "For he who was God did not deem equality with God something to be grasped, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness, and suffering all the way to death. And because of this, God greatly exalted him and made his name the name above every other name. It's the same thing Jesus says in the gospel today. How slow you are to understand that the Son of Man must suffer and therefore enter into his glory. Well, it's the same for you and me. Suffering is all around us. Sometimes we do voluntary suffering, like our penances during Lent. Sometimes we enter into the mystery of Christ's passing and dying and rising by abstaining from meat on Friday. There are all kinds of ways that we can intentionally enter into the Paschal mystery and make it our own. But there's also involuntary suffering. It's the things that life throws at us, the things that aren't fair, the griefs and losses and failures that are just part of human life. And we, because of Christ's resurrection, don't allow ourselves to be defeated by those. We take them in stride. We turn them into glory. We turn them into some kind of participation in the salvific death and resurrection of Christ. And so suffering, while the world thinks it's absolutely meaningless and just needs to be avoided, we have the power to find meaning in suffering. We have the power to transform it into our own redemption and the redemption of the world, to participate in that salvific ministry of Christ himself, to enter into his death and suffering so that we will also be elevated, lifted up into his glory.